Warning: this podcast contains foul language, sexual situations, and discussions of drugs and drinking. Yeah.
Welcome to Fuck Shakespeare,
a podcast for the Shakespeareanly challenged.
And anyone who really enjoys some saucy dick jokes.
Teachers, we might insult you a little bit, sorry. Okay, everybody,
enjoy!
Hi, I'm Erin.
Hey, I'm Diana. Yahoo! We're back. And we're hitting act five of Macbeth.
Yeah.
Dun, 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 dun.
Talk a little bit about what we're doing today, because we're doing something a little different in terms of order.
So act five is a crazy little jumble of little scenes that works its way up to the final denouement.
You know what that word means?
Fancy French word.
Yeah, it means basically the climax at the end.
Climax, that's a good word. So I put together two scenes that are about the Macbeths. And then next episode, we will have a few scenes that are about Malcolm and his gang who are sneaking up on the castle of Dunsinane. All right. And we'll kind of go about it that way so that we don't have to intercut. Okay, well, now we have Lady Macbeth. Now we have this weird bunch of English soldiers. Now we have Mac, and now we have this weird bunch of English soldiers. Okay, so that's what we're doing.
Like it or not, that's what we're doing.
So it's a little bit out of order, these next couple of scenes, and that's okay. But this one, Act 5, Scene 1, is very, 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 very famous.
Super famous.
Super famous. And it has a super famous line in it.
Out, dumb spot.
Yes. That line, when you put the dog out, you know, that you can use all the time. Get out of here, you mangy mutt. one of the young women at the Chianti residency, where I just was in Italy, she said, oh, I've been listening to Macbeth, and your co-host cackles like a witch. And I said, yes, she does. Pretty funny. So now every time I hear Erin cackle, I'm like, oh my goodness. Hi, Jonelle. Enjoy that cackle.
I was supposed to play Hecate.
Hecate. I'm Hecate. Let's see. We have other cool news, which is that I revamped a website, and it's cool because you can go to fuckshakespeare.com without the U, fckshakespeare.com. And from there, if you're a lazy motherfucker and you don't want to join Spotify or iTunes, or you're old and you can't figure those out, you can just play the episodes straight from our website now. So that is cool. So you can have all the fun, all in the same place. And you can leave us comments there, because iTunes is a mess. Sorry, iTunes, but you're a mess. And we're not getting...
If you're listening, iTunes, people have said that they're leaving comments. And they're people that I believe. They're not people who would lie to us just to get us to leave them alone. I'm sure there are people like that. But the people who've said that they've left comments are believable, truthful people, like our children. And those comments are not showing up.
And by comments, you mean reviews, right?
Reviews. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
I don't know.
And they're not showing up. So it looks like we are unloved. And that's sad.
Yeah. We know you're out there, and we know you're listening, and we appreciate it, and we want to know what you think. And further, if you have, you know, left us a paper or a poem or, you know, something interesting, we would totally read that during the podcast if we saw it, but we're not seeing it.
So you can leave it in the comment section at anchor.fm, or you can leave it right on our website, or email us. And we would love to include your thoughts and your ideas on the website, on the podcast as well. And that would be cool.
Yeah.
Send it on. Barrage us. Go ahead. We can take it.
We can.
So act five, scene one. And this is the famous Lady Macbeth mad scene. This is the last time we see her, and we didn't see her for all of Act 4. So she was off doing
getting her mad done.
getting her makeup done. Yeah, or like, you know, shaking out her hands and jumping up and down so that she can like get her heart racing, something, whatever it is. Walking around outside in the rain so she looks like a straggly bitch. I don't know. It's crazy. Yeah. I've seen this scene played in so many different ways. Yeah, it's interesting. Did not like Marion Cotillard in the church. That sucked. It was stupid. Terrible. That whole movie sucked. It was terrible.
It was
Do
so
not
boring.
Watch that version. Boring, oh my God.
Boring.
And if you didn't have the subtitles on, you couldn't fucking hear anything.
Right, because the mix was really bad. I don't know who the sound editor was on that film, but you couldn't hear those actors with the background noise and the music. It was the mix was all off.
So we don't recommend that one.
Don't do it.
But anyway. So there, you know, many things could have happened to this poor lady, and we'll see. Maybe we'll discuss at the end of the scene. What do you think happened to her? You know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Once she's finished. We see her through this whole scene, and the whole scene is in prose. If we haven't discussed that,
I think we did briefly touch on it when we were talking about the murderers, but let's talk about it again because it's important.
And the porter.
And the porter, right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. As you guys know, most of the elevated characters, I'm not going to say higher status necessarily because it's not necessarily higher status like Caliban in The Tempest, but elevated characters speak in poetry, right? And most of the unelevated characters, whether it's status or evil intent or being someone other than their true nature, will speak in straight prose.
And prose is like regular speak, but it does have a rhythm of its own. So the reason for Lady Mac to be speaking in prose here.
She out of her mind.
She's out of her mind. So we've been talking the whole time about them being sleep deprived. And here we actually get to see what that looks like for her. She's walking the castle hallways with a candle, you know, her eyes open, but she's asleep. So she's not really asleep. This is not REM sleep.
Not REM sleep.
Definitely not. There she goes again, cackling. So this is the epitome of the illness that has plagued them now in the form of not being able to rest, both of them. And what I find so fascinating about this scene is that she is playing both parts. She is Mac and herself in the scene.
Trying to reintegrate them because they've been disintegrated through this whole thing. Stopped sharing lines. They've stopped even being in the same room together, mostly. So she is reintegrating them, but in her wacky mind.
And carrying all of that responsibility and all of that guilt and all of that regret all in herself. No wonder she's suffering so much. And the gentlewoman even says she wouldn't want to be her no matter what. For no crown, for no nothing. Aww.
Yep. Right. And interesting, going back to when she says in the murder of Duncan scene, when she says, I'd have done it myself, but he looked like my father. If he hadn't looked like my father, I'd have done it myself. Well, I wonder how much of that haunts her as well, that, you know, it's not just Duncan, the father of their country. It's symbolically all fathers, you know?
Yeah.
I wonder.
Yeah, that's powerful too.
And Macbeth being a father.
Not being a father, yeah. No, definitely. Because the words that she repeats at the end of the scene are also very much about her non-existent sex life anymore, you know?
Yep.
Which probably used to be vibrant and, you know, passionate and urgent and stuff. They were going for it. They were trying for that air. They were talking about it all the time, doing it all the time, and then they weren't.
They were the best couple in Shakespeare.
The hottest couple in Shakespeare. The power couple.
Yeah, the power couple.
They were the Beyonce and Jay-Z of Shakespeare.
Except Macbeth didn't cheat on Lady Mac.
Yeah.
Oops, did I say that?
Oops. Well, Twitter says it. Instagram says it. So you ain't the first.
No. How anybody cheats on Queen Bee is beyond me, but whatever. He's not as talented as she is. Not as handsome as she is. He must be very intelligent and interesting to talk to and very good in the sack.
Let's hope. We got very far off track from Macbeth's to Hollywood. Okay. Grammywood.
All right.
All right. So coming back to Scotland. Here we go. Enter a doctor of physic. As if it was a doctor of something else. Doctor of sawing wood or I don't know. A doctor of physic and a waiting gentlewoman.
I have two nights watched with you, but can perceive no truth in your report. When was it she last walked?
Since His Majesty went into the field, I have seen her rise from her bed, throw her nightgown upon her, unlock her closet, take forth paper, fold it, write upon it, read it, afterwards seal it, and again return to bed, yet all this while in a most fast sleep. Sorry, her closet in this case would just be like some kind of a chest or a desk. Not necessarily her private room.
A great perturbation in nature to receive at once the benefit of sleep and do the effects of watching.
So perturbation, disturbance, right? So very big disturbance, upset in her own nature, her own person, because she seems to, he thinks she's getting the benefit of sleeping, but she probably isn't. And do the effects of watching means doing the business of being awake.
Right,
exactly.
In this slumbery agitation, besides her walking and other factual performances, what at any time have you heard her say?
That, sir, which I will not report after her.
You may to me, and 'tis most meet you should.
Neither to you nor anyone, having no witness to confirm my speech. So she's confirming that this is dangerous for her to even bring him here. But she needs a witness. So he's her witness. Lo you, here she comes. This is her very guise. And upon my life, fast asleep. Observe her. Stand close. So this is the way she always looks. And stand close just means let's get out of sight.
How came she by that light?
Why, it stood by her. She has light by her continually. 'Tis her command.
You see, her eyes are open.
Aye, but their sense is shut.
What is it she does now? Look how she rubs her hands.
That's a wonderful embedded stage direction. Yep. In case from up in the balconies you can't see what she's doing, he tells you. It is an accustomed action with her to seem thus washing her hands. I have known her to continue in this a quarter of an hour.
Yet, here's a spot. Hark, she speaks. I'll set down what comes from her to satisfy my remembrance the more strongly. Out, damn spot. Out, I say. One, two. Why then, 'tis time to do it. Hell is murky. Fie, my lord, fie, a soldier and a feared. What need we fear? Who knows it when none can call our power to account? Yet who would have thought the old man to have so much blood in him. Do you mark that?
So the doctor says he's going to take some notes, right? And yeah, then, right. So she says one, two. Remember Macbeth said, when she strikes upon the bell twice, that's my clue that I'm supposed to go, that she's ready, right? That's him, right? Saying one, two, why then 'tis time to do it. That's him. She's playing him.
Yeah.
And he's saying, hell is murky. And then it's her saying, fine, my lord, fine. Right?
Yep.
What's wrong with you, right?
Yeah.
And then why do we have to, we don't have to be afraid, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. It never really occurred to me that way until her very last speech, but I think she's doing it throughout the scene, that she's playing both parts and she's speaking to him and speaking as him.
Yeah.
Which is fascinating. Yeah.
But I wonder, I don't think she would put on a voice. I think she would just talk back and forth.
I think it's just for the actress to know herself, so that she can make that clear for herself, and then she'll make it clear for the audience. It's always the truth. If you make it clear for yourself in terms of understanding or in terms of movement or physical embodiment, You will make it clear to the audience, I promise you.
Yeah. Do you mark that?
The Thane of Fife had a wife. Where is she now? What, will these hands ne'er be clean? No more of that, my lord, no more of that. You mar all with this starting.
So there again, that's an interesting little sing-song rhyme at the beginning. Yeah. Who's the Thane of Fife?
That would be Macduff.
Had a wife. She's gone.
Yeah, dead.
So she's heard about that. And it's probably too horrible for her to speak about. So she speaks this little sing-songy thing. It's too awful for her to even imagine her husband was responsible for that, right? This is not the husband that she knew. Not at all.
Yeah, right.
And then what will the Tansner be clean? That's her, right? And then speaking to him. Or it's him. Because he was the one who said, you know, all
my hands incarnadine.
Yeah, all the seas.
Yeah.
Cannot the wash the sea incarnadine, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's him.
Yeah, it's him. And this starting means startled movement. So she's seeing him reacting to the knocking on the gate, which she doesn't talk about, but she talks about his reaction to it. That's the end of that scene for them, right?
Go to, go to. You have known what you should not.
Yeah, and go to is almost like, shh, quiet, stop. It's this sort of colloquial yikes kind of a phrase.
Yeah.
And the gentlewoman is like, yeah. She has spoke what she should not. I am sure of that. Heaven knows what she has known.
Here's the smell of the blood still. All the perfumes of Arabia will not sweeten this little hand. Oh, oh, oh. What a sigh is there. The heart is sorely charged.
Sorely charged. It's painfully overfull. Her heart has more responsibility to hide stuff than she can even manage. And it's leaking out here in her sleep. I would not have such a heart in my bosom for the dignity of the whole body.
Well, well, well.
Dignity is status, so I don't care. I don't care about her status. I wouldn't be her for anything. Right?
Yep.
And then the gentlewoman takes this well literally. She says, pray God it be, sir. It be well. I hope it's well.
Yeah. This disease is beyond my practice.
Yeah, so he kind of reacts to that like, no, it's not going to be well because I can't fix it. I'm not going to be able to fix it, right? This is beyond the scope of my expertise.
Disease, right? Disease and disease, right? Yeah.
Yeah, well, that beautiful prefix, dis, that Shakespeare invented. So it's not ease, it's hell.
Wait, talk about that quickly because not everybody heard our conversation about the prefix dis.
So the prefix dis was invented by Shakespeare, and the word dis is the name of the ruler of Hades. It means the devil. It means
Satan, Mephistopheles, Lucifer.
It means Hades. It means the guy who came and swept up Persephone and carried her off in the chariot. That guy, the guy who rules hell, is dis. And so when Shakespeare slapped that prefix onto things, it's like you are obeying that dark side of yourself. So if you disobey, you are obeying your darker impulses, right? You're not obeying your light. Yeah. So dis-ease is not ease. It's the opposite of ease. It's the underside, the dark side, right? The upside down.
Yeah, the upside down. Right. And also, bing, 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 paper alert.
Yeah.
Because...
If it's
you
such a cool paper.
Talk
go through
about,
and find
if
all
you
the dis first, words.
Find all the dis words. First, find the historical factoid about Shakespeare having done this. Write about that and then find his dis words.
Yeah, they're super
That's
cool.
an interesting paper. Yeah. What plays are they in? What context?
Yeah, and then when you speak those words, think about like your holes that are down below, man. Because that's where all the demons are climbing into, you know, and affecting yourself to do all of the upside down wrong things. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yet I have known those which have walked in their sleep who have died holily in their beds.
Right. So he almost has to balance out dis-ease with holily, right? There's a great quiet antithesis in that. So other sleep workers are not necessarily damned to hell. Right? Did people have sleepwalked and sleptwalked? Slept walked.
But here's an interesting thing also is that holily, Lady Mac uses holily, what thou wouldst.
Highly, that wouldst thou holily.
Thou wouldst do holily.
And yet with strong.
So she uses holily.
In her very first scene.
I think that's interesting.
Nice. Nice catch, Erin.
Right? Yeah. Okay. And Lady Mac, wash your hands. Put on your nightgown. Look not so pale. I tell you yet again, Banquo's buried and not come out on's grave. So she's saying, wash your hands, put on your nightgown, look not so pale. Right? That's her talking to him.
But then maybe this is him. Like, Banquo's not going to give us a problem anymore. And that was the place where they turned away from each other, right? When he stopped telling her things, was the whole thing about Banquo.
Even so? To bed, to bed. There's knocking at the gate. Come, 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 give me your hand. What's done cannot be undone. To bed, to bed, to bed.
I think it's amazing that she ends with that, because that is all either one of them wants to do, is to sleep. And also, if they had stayed in their beds, they wouldn't have killed the king. Being in bed together has been a really problematic thing for them, right? They have had no babies. And I think come, to have the word come four times, he's not coming. He's not coming to bed. He's not coming inside of her. They're not having babies, right? They're not having sex. I mean, this last speech is all about them being torn apart as a couple, and she's trying to put them back together. And it's just so sad. It's heart-wrenching. It's horrible.
Yeah.
So each time, if you're doing this, either in class or as an actor, and every time you say to bed, know that he's not coming. And so you need to ask him again. It's not to bed, to bed, to bed. Right? It's not a hurried thing. It's not come, 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 come.
Well, I think the first two, to bed, the to first bed, two. There's knocking the at the two. Gate. That's reliving. We've killed Duncan. We got to go pretend to be asleep. But then after that, when he doesn't come, right, in her head, he doesn't come. And then he doesn't come. And then he doesn't come. Right? Yeah.
And give me your hand. Like, let's be one again. Let's be together again. Oh,
yeah.
So sad. So sad. So
and what's done cannot be undone.
Yeah.
Oh my God. That could also be a realization for her in the come, 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 give me your hand. And he doesn't. What's done cannot be undone. We will never be together again. And then pleading. Please come to bed.
Please, please come to bed. Please. So, you know, you can do this as some kind of creepy sleepwalking ghost scene, but it ain't that. It ain't that. This is heartbreak. This is grief in the extreme for her. And the grief is about their dissolution as a couple. Fuck Duncan. She doesn't care, you know, but she cares about them, the two of them.
Yeah. Her life has ended. I mean, it ended now. It's over before what comes next, but it's over because all she wanted was him.
Yeah, and she leaves, and that's the last time we see her.
And she wanders off, and the doctor says, will she go now to bed?
Directly.
Foul whisperings are abroad. Unnatural deeds do breed unnatural troubles. Infected minds to their deaf pillows will discharge their secrets. More needs she the divine than the physician. God, God, forgive us all. Look after her. Remove from her the means of all annoyance, and still keep eyes upon her. So good night. My mind she has mated and amazed my sight, I think, but dare not speak.
Good night, good doctor. Remove from her the means of all annoyance, anything she could use to kill herself. So he suspects she might try to do that because she's so far gone.
Yep.
And then my mind, she has made it. She's bewildered. She's stupefied me and amazed. So we have May, right?
He is dismayed. Mm-hmm. Dismayed.
Yep.
So we have this. Yeah.
This.
We have this rhyming couplet. We have night sight, and then we have extra lines. So it's, again, uncomfortable.
Yep.
Doesn't end well. So then I put this other scene together with this one, 5-3, because it's the other scene with the doctor. The doctor comes to give his report as Macbeth is preparing for war. And Macbeth is feeling pretty good because he's armed with the witch's prophecies, right? He's like, nobody can kill me because everybody's born of women. And nobody can kill me because the wood's not going to come up to the castle. So I'm going to survive this one way or another. That's what he thinks at this point.
Yeah. And let's talk about the
And he can see,
servant.
He can see his thanes, his lords running from the castle. All of his supposed lords of the kingdom running from the castle to join fucking Malcolm. And he's like, yeah, Ron, you fucking twats. So it's bad.
Let's talk about the name of his servant.
Oh, yeah. How do you pronounce that, Aaron?
It's spelled S-E-Y-T-O-N.
And pronounced?
Satan.
So great. So he's calling for his servant, and there he is, calling Satan! Calling for the devil himself.
Yeah.
But what I find incredible about Act 5 is that we get Macbeth's energy back.
Yeah.
Because this, he understands. War, he understands. This whole being king bullshit, he didn't understand at all.
Right.
He sucked at it. Right?
Yeah.
So he's in his element now. He can go down this way. This is fine for him. You know, he's like a Viking. Die on the battlefield and I will fucking go to Valhalla.
Yeah.
He can do this. He's comfortable and he's giving orders and he's fine. Yeah. So we get to see him kind of return to himself at the end here. Except when he hears about his wife. All right. Bring me no more reports. Let them fly all. Till Birnam Wood removed to Dunsinane, I cannot taint with fear. What's the boy Malcolm? Was he not born of woman? The spirits that know all mortal consequences have pronounced me thus. Fear not, Macbeth. No man that's born of woman shall e'er have power upon thee. Then fly, false thanes, and mingle with the English epicures. The mind I sway by and the heart I bear shall never sag with doubt nor shake with fear. So it's great. Rhyming couplet at the end, he's like, done, finished. I am not going to die here.
Bear and fear. So in old English, it would have been closer in pronunciation.
It would probably have been bear and fair. Yeah.
Yeah.
I bet. So he's like, fucking Malcolm, I don't care, right?
Yeah.
Till the Birnam Wood removes to, is just moves towards, right? All mortal consequences, all of the businesses of people, the people that, the spirits that know all these things have told me these things, right? And then mingle with the English epicures. He has so much disdain for the British, which is great because he's Scot, right?
Yeah.
And epicures are lovers of luxury. So he's like, these pansies don't know how to fight. These English fops, bring them on.
Right. Then fly, false thanes is a lot of spitting fuck words.
Yeah. Fuck you. Yeah. And then in comes a servant who is not Satan. The loon. The green-faced loon. The devil damn thee black, thou green-faced loon. Where gotst thou that goose look?
There is 10,000.
Geese, villain?
Soldiers, sir.
Go prick thy face and overread thy fear, thou lily-livered boy. What soldier's patch? Death of thy soul, those linen cheeks of thine are counselors to fear. What soldier's way face?
Wow, he's mean. Oh my
God. He's so fucking pissed. Right. So Loon is like worthless, ignorant boy. So he's got nothing but like boys and old men left in the castle, probably, you know, the remnants of those who go to war, leave behind. And so he's like, prick your face and overread your fear. Cover your pale face with blood so you don't like look such a fucking coward.
Right, so you're not white.
Lily livered, when your liver was white, it was said to be the liver of a coward because the liver is supposed to be dark red with blood, right? So when there's no blood flowing through your liver, you don't have any passions because the liver was the seat of passion. And then patch is fool because the motley patched up wear that fools wore. Death of thy soul. Go fucking die.
right? And then he says, those linen cheeks, those white cheeks of yours are counselors to fear. That means they're going to teach other people to be afraid. You go running around the fucking castle looking like that whey face. You know, whey is also cream, mm-hmm. right? It's like, you fucking asshole. You can't go running around the castle like that. You're going to scare the shit out of everybody.
And the servant says, the English force so please you.
Take thy face hence, Satan. I'm sick at heart. When I behold Satan, I say, this push will cheer me ever or disseat me now. Disseat me.
And so how interesting is that?
Seat me in hell.
Right. But also deceit. Deceit as in deceive plus disseat. Right? It's both.
Yeah.
Because it sounds like both.
Yeah. And so we hear both. And we can have both in the same moment.
Yeah.
Right? So this push, this battle will either confirm me or unseat me. Seat me in hell.
Yep.
Yeah. And then he gets to this interesting place where he starts thinking, fuck, I wish this was fucking over. I have lived long enough. My way of life is fallen into the sear, the yellow leaf. And that which should accompany old age as honor, love, obedience, troops of friends, I must not look to have, but in their stead, curses, not loud, but deep, mouth, honor, breath, which the poor heart would fain deny and dare not. Satan! So my way of life, my course of life, fallen into the sear is the dried up point of leaves and things like that. It's when the autumn has hit and everything's drying up and everything's dying. And so he says, that's where I am in my life. I know it. I know I'm on the edge of that place. And when you come to the end of your life, you should be able to point at people and say, these are my friends, mm-hmm. right? These people honor me. They love me. And he knows he doesn't have any of that. But instead he has curses.
Right? Not loud, but deep. So people aren't cursing me to my face, but they are cursing me in the depths of their soul. And mouth honor, not true honor, mouth honor.
There is conviction there, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And which his poor heart would deny, he wishes he could think that there was a different truth, but he knows they're right. And that poor heart is his poor heart.
Yeah.
He would like to deny this, but he can't.
Right.
And in strolls Satan, right? Because he's like, I don't have to fucking hurry. What's the fucking hurry?
What is your gracious pleasure?
What news more?
All is confirmed, my lord, which was reported.
I'll fight till from my bones my flesh be hacked. So he's willing to die in battle, right? And this is his only honor. Give me my armor.
'Tis not needed yet.
I'll put it on. Send out more horses. Scour the country round. Hang those that talk of fear. Give me mine armor. How does your patient, doctor? So scour. I love this. S-K-I-R-R. Yeah. It's almost like it's written in Scottish.
Yeah.
Scour the country round. Because it means scour. But it's so funny, right? And then hang those that talk of fear. So many kings did that. Queen Mary did it. King James did this. Anybody who says they're afraid and doesn't like what's going on in the country, just hang them up. Hang them the fuck up and put them on the roadside to make everybody else stop talking about
Donald
being afraid.
Trump.
Yeah. How does your patient, doctor?
Not so sick, my lord, as she is troubled with thick coming fancies that keep her from her rest.
Thick coming, endless, constant fancies or worries. Cure her of that. So Macbeth cuts him off. He's like, I don't have time for your fucking bumbling, you know? This is your job to make her better. Canst thou not minister to a mind diseased? Pluck from the memory a rooted sorrow, raise out the written troubles of the brain, and with some sweet, oblivious antidote, cleanse the stuffed bosom of that perilous stuff which weighs upon the heart.
Therein the patient must minister to himself.
The doctor even cuts him off. Wow. So in Macbeth's speech, remember he said that his heart could not deny the things that the people say about him
And so I think this is him talking about himself. Can't you take away? Raise out is erase, but it's kind of violent, like burn it out. Give me some sweet oblivious antidote that causes amnesia. I'm oblivious, right? Would be like, mm-hmm. Let me just forget. But he's talking about her, but I think he's also talking about himself. Mm-hmm. Cleanse the stuffed bosom. So they are becoming, Mac and Lady are becoming one in these two scenes. Yep. Again. The stuffed bosom, the overfilled heart. We just talked about her having that. And give me something which weighs, you know, to cleanse me of that stuff which weighs upon the heart. He also needs this, not just her.
Right. Yeah. Right? And the doctor knows he means that.
And so he's trying to counsel him, like, you've got to fix it yourself, yeah. Man. And Macbeth is like, well, fuck medicine. Throw physic to the dogs. Fuck it. You know, I'll none of it. Screw this shit. Come, put mine armor on. Give me my staff. A staff is a lance. So he's like going into battle, fully stocked with everything. Satan, send out. Doctor, the thanes fly from me. Come, sir, dispatch. If thou couldst, doctor, cast the water of my land, find her disease, and purge it to a sound and pristine health, I would applaud thee to the very echo that should applaud again. Pull it off, I say. What rhubarb, syme, or what purgative drug would scour these English heads? Hear'st thou of them? So he's mixing up her world and his. Her world that needs some kind of flower, some kind of blossom that's medicinal, right? A syme is a kind of a geranium kind of a flower with a blossom in the middle and lots of other little blossoms on the side. All of these things are purgatives, which is like make somebody vomit out their sickness, right? Yeah. And so now he's saying what kind of that kind of drug would get rid of the fuck in English?
It's also interesting to me. First, he's talking out fuck medicine. Then he talks to Satan, armor, staff, Satan, send out, doctor. Then he talks to the doctor. The thanes fly from me. Comes or dispatches back to Satan. He is all over the place. He's like talking here, talking there, talking here, talking there. He's like, whoop.
Yeah. I think he's at that manic stage of not having slept. And like he's getting this total rush of craziness right at the end there. And you're going to see him be really, really manic and really like throwing fate to the dogs in these last few scenes. You really will. He's like, come on, kill me. Just try.
And the doctor says, I, my good lord, your royal preparation makes us hear something.
Bring it after me. I will not be afraid of death and bane till Burnham Forest come to Dunsinane. Bring my fucking armor. Walk with me right now to Satan. So he doesn't even answer the doctor. And then death and bane. Bane is ruin, fatal injury. Lovely word that rhymes with Dunsinane, right? So he's got a rhyming couplet.
Yeah.
And then the doctor has one too.
Yeah, I was just going to say, but the doctor has one too.
Yeah. So like this double, you know, rhyming couplet signals the end. So if we have two rhyming couplets, it's like doom, right? Yeah. End. Yep. The big end.
Were I from Dunsinane away and clear, profit again should hardly draw me here.
So if I could get from here, I would, because no amount of money would bring me back here.
And again, this has this stupid, you know, parentheses word aside. This doesn't have to be aside. Macbeth just said, I'm getting the fuck out of here. Bring it after me, right? He's gone. The doctor can speak out loud.
Right. He could talk to the audience, right?
Right.
This is a little breaking of the fourth wall. Yo, just say no. I wish I wasn't here, and no amount of money could bring me back if I was away.
Or what's the harm in him saying this to Macbeth, right?
Well,
everybody's going to die today.
He could say it to Macbeth's back as Macbeth is stalking from the... There are many choices to be made.
Yeah, but it definitely ain't an aside and doesn't have to be.
You get to choose that. You, the director.
Yeah.
You, the actor. Not no fucking editor who doesn't know what Shakespeare meant.
We were reading this Reddit thread and one guy way down the thread was like, who the fuck are y'all to give Shakespeare notes? And I love that. I was like, yeah, you tell them. So in a way, that's the editors too. Like, who the fuck are y'all to, you know, say Shakespeare meant this and Shakespeare meant that? Just leave it.
Yeah.
Leave the words. Yep. We don't need all your inserts. Keep your opinions to yourself.
All right.
So we're setting up the Macs for their dismal end. I'm sorry. I know they're villains or whatever, but I love them.
They're not villains. They're not flawed humans who make bad choices.
Yes.
I was just reading something interesting about Hannah Arendt, who was a philosopher who had been in Germany, had left Germany prior to the rise of the Nazis, or as the Nazis were rising to power, I guess. And she was a philosopher. And after watching, I think it was Goebbels being deposed at The Hague, she talked about how, I wish I could remember exactly what it was, but she talked about how he wasn't evil with a capital E, but he was banal. He was a little bureaucratic man who went along with what he went along with, not out of being evil, but out of wanting to advance in his career and be part of something bigger than himself. And a lot of people hate that she said that because, I mean, she herself was dead now, Jew, who would have been killed by Hitler and his posse. But I thought it was very interesting in terms of this kind of discussion about what is a villain and what is evil. Because when someone does an action that is an evil action, like killing someone or killing lots of people, but they do it from a place of being convinced that they're protecting themselves and their loved ones and their country, it's very hard to label that villainous or evil because they believe they're doing the right thing. Their actions can be evil and villainous, but they themselves, I don't know.
Yeah, interesting. I think maybe the answer lies in how much evil they continue to do, you know, like maybe in compounding, because one thing seems like, okay, I needed to do this to protect myself, but then does killing get easier as you do more of it?
Mm-hmm. As you other people who would be your scapegoat and make that non-human, then you can kill them and it's not an evil deed because they're not human.
Right.
When you start to call other human beings not human, that's where it begins to tip.
But I do think this question of compounding, you know, like if you do one evil thing and then you're like, God, that was bad and that's not me. That's not who I am. Right. That's different.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But like Macbeth, when you start,
it's like keeping a secret, right?
To pile it up.
Telling a lie.
Yeah.
Telling a lie, right, where you tell a lie and then you have to lie to protect that lie. Then you have to lie to protect that lie. So then that makes you a liar.
Right.
The first lie may not have made you a liar.
Right.
But all the ones that come after prove that you are.
So the first kill may not make you a killer necessarily. Maybe not. But after that.
Well, I think it's a murderer, but it doesn't do evil.
Right. Yeah. And as we
anyway,
said,
that's another paper I
comparing Macbeth to Goebbels. We went down a very interesting road there. Okay. There's your philosophical side road for today. Thank you so much for joining us on this crazy ride. And we're going to be wrapping up Macbeth in the next couple episodes. We've got two more left. And remember that the last one is going to be Drunk Shakespeare with Aaron and Diana being crazy.
Are we drinking scotch?
Yeah.
What are we drinking?
Whiskey girl. Scurr the country round for some whiskey.
Okay, good. All right, well, I'm Erin.
And I'm Diana. And this was Food Shakespeare.
Shakespeare.
Shakespeare. Ciao.
Shakespeare. Ciao. For additional fun shit from Fuck Shakespeare, you can head to our website at fckshakespeare.com.
Or find us on Instagram at fckshakespeare. If you are enjoying this podcast,
you could support us for as little as 99 cents per month. Just click the support button on the page on Spotify or Anchor.
Tell your friends.